everybody's born with a certain level of IQ that you can hit, but your EQ, you can actually invest into it and you can grow your EQ, your emotional intelligence. And that's really all about being self-aware, how you're perceived by those around you. And the better you are at your self-awareness, then the better you can lead and motivate a team.
It's time for a new era of communication in the swine industry, one that you can get the latest updates while commuting or driving to farms. Here, you will have the brightest minds of the global swine industry in your pocket. Swinet Podcast is only possible with the support of forward-looking and innovative companies like NutriQuest, experts serving producers and delivering breakthrough solutions. Genesis, the first power in genetics. Merck Animal Health, driven by prevention. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. Zinpro, essential trace minerals, exceptional performance. Every Pig, a simple yet powerful pig health and production management tool. Gestall, always one step ahead in swine feeding. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high quality, safe, and sustainable way.
Welcome to the SwineIt Podcast Show. I am Laura Greiner, your host for today's episode.
This episode's sponsor highlight is Adiseo, a worldwide leader in animal nutrition. Our company offers specialized technical support for nutritionists, veterinarians, and other animal production professionals. Our portfolio of programs and services include a wide array of high-performing feed solutions such as essential nutrients, palatability, feed preservation, mycotoxin management, and health and nutrition. To learn more about our company, visit us at www.adiseo.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Greiner. I'm your host today for the SwineIt Podcast. And with me today, I have Blake Wilson from Adiseo. Blake, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So this wonderful conversation we were having before we started the recording, I wasn't very familiar with some of your background. And so would you mind starting with just where you've been and how you got to where you're at today for the audience?
Absolutely. So I am the commercial director for Adiseo Swan Business. I've been with Adiseo going on 3 years now. Before joining the Swan team, I was on the poultry team and handled the Southeast for them. So I actually live just outside of Athens, Georgia, born and raised on a poultry farm out there. And then previous to Adiseo, did a stint at Provimi. And before that, I was in live production working in integration.
Great, great. So a lot of business experience then, would that be fair to say?
You could say a fair amount.
Yeah. So I understand that in addition to just your business experience, you're pursuing now a master's degree in business. So would you mind sharing a little bit about why you chose to go down that route?
Absolutely. So it's something that I've always considered ever since I even finished up my undergrad. And when I finished my undergrad, I had a open position working at a processing plant in South Carolina. And so I went straight out of school working on the poultry side, working at a processing plant, and then been in the industry in that aspect, especially on the production side, for over 10 years after I graduated school. Once I finished production and got into the sell side, I realized I was missing a key component that would help me to really deliver what I would say is a quality job for not just for Adiseo, but for myself. And that knowledge, that education is something that I desired. Like I said, I always had thought about doing it. And the time came. It's amazing that I started in 2019, right before the pandemic. And actually during the pandemic was a great time to be in school because I wasn't traveling quite as much and was able to focus on my studies. It worked out really well. I didn't say earlier, I have three kids. I have a 16-year-old. And then a 2 and a 3-year-old. And so being at home with the 2 and the 3-year-old and going to school and working, my wife at the time, she was working. So we were all juggling, but it worked out really well by not having to travel as much, even though we're still working, still being on video calls and stuff, being able to be home and not have to go through my master's while trying to travel was a blessing that I didn't even know was going to happen.
Yeah, that's so true. I think we all learned how to juggle our careers and our children in the household at the same time. But that's wonderful that you're able to take advantage of that and do that education. When you're talking about an MBA, I understand there's a couple of different types of MBAs. Could you maybe help our audience understand the MBA program that you're doing versus some of the other options that are out there?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was looking at going back and doing my MBA, I looked at all the different ones. So the one that I most considered before selling on the program I'm in was a web MBA, because I am working, I do have a family, and it's something I could do at my own pace. The web MBA is a quality degree, quality education, but I don't do as well virtually. And so I really wanted that in person. And then you start looking at a traditional MBA, well, that requires you to be on campus during the week. Like I said earlier, I'm married, I have a family, and I'm working full time. So that didn't really work out for me. And then found the executive MBA program. And so I'm currently in the executive MBA program at Kennesaw State, graduate this May. So I'm finishing up my final classwork right now. And that executive MBA program for me, it's weekend based. So I go Saturday and Sunday to class. Usually it's every 3 weeks. Since the pandemic, it went to once a month for safety reasons, which then allowed me to do my current job during the week, and then also gave me the flexibility to also be there as a husband and a father for my kids, and only taking up a little bit of time on the weekends. Now, doing the actual classwork and homework, you have to be creative on finding the time to do that. But the executive MBA program was by far the best option for myself.
Yeah, I have a few friends that have also pursued that type of program where they do it on the weekends. And that seems very good for our individuals, like you said, that already have a job and potentially a family as well that they're trying to balance. When we think about our students today that are finishing programs in their college careers, what recommendations do you have for them as far as what does an MBA give them? You know, I think that's one of the big questions they ask is, should I stay and do it, or should I go work for a while and then do what you're doing today?
Yeah, so I would say a lot of it depends on what your undergraduate degree is in first. If it is animal science, or like for myself, I have a history degree as my undergrad. And so there's no business background there. And you learn a lot during your working career, but you don't get all the fundamentals. You don't get the economics, the accounting, the finance exposure. So if you have a science degree or a liberal arts degree that doesn't have any business background, I would say it's probably very valuable for you to go ahead and go through an MBA program before you get into the work field. Because once you get in that workforce, it's so hard to go back to school. I mean, I was 15 plus years out of my undergrad before I found the opportunity to go back to school. And then it's even tougher because you are usually married, you're working, you have a family, and trying to juggle that plus school is not the easiest route to go. But then again, if you have a business degree of some sort, whether it's a ag economics or a general business degree, it may actually benefit you to go ahead and go in the workforce for a few years, get some experience before you get your MBA, because then there's different types of MBAs. We touched on them with the web MBA versus a traditional versus an executive. My executive MBA is basically broken down into two categories. We have the business portion, which is considered one class load, and that's your accounting, your finance, your economics. Then we have the leadership, and the leadership discusses human capital, teamwork, team building, coaching, mentoring. There's actually a full portion of our program, which is probably the most valuable personally for me, that is just as soon as we start, we're assigned a executive coach, which really helps you map out your career, your personal goals, and really helps you to analyze and think about what you want to do with your career. And I can tell you several people in my cohort realize they're not even in the career they want to be in, right? So as you sit down with this coach and you start mapping out your career plan, you realize, yeah, you may be good at this one area, but that's not your passion, that's not your goal, and that's not where you ultimately want to be or be a part of. And so that is truly a phenomenal part of my coursework. And then that actually moves into a mentoring. And then the mentoring has a whole different dynamic where a coach is pushing you and challenging you and making you actually self-analyze yourself. A mentor, somebody then you can look up to and somebody that you can actually start asking questions and really getting their feedback and their experience. And, hey, I'm experiencing this. I'm seeing this in my work. How would you handle it? And then you build that relationship between the coach and your mentor. You start developing a network. And your network is what is the second most valuable part of a program like I'm in. So my cohorts, there's 40 plus 42 of us in there, and we all know each other very well. We all have diverse backgrounds. But yet, if I need something from a accounting standpoint, I know somebody to call. If I need a graphic designer, I know somebody to call. It's very, very valuable, the human interaction that you get. Now, for somebody who has the background with the people, with the teaming, a web MBA may be just fine for you, just to give you that business background. You know, if your background is HR, you may not need this executive MBA program. You may just need to touch on the business aspects. The accounting, the finance, the economics. So it really just depends on what you're looking for, on what you need.
Sure, sure. When you think about some of the classwork that you've taken so far, what would be some key pieces that you've been able to apply into your current business, into your current role?
Sure. I'll take it twofold, since my program is really 50% leadership, 50% business. So on the business side, from a budgeting standpoint, and then from a marketing standpoint, are extremely valuable. Running a commercial team and trying to brand ourselves. So historically, Adiseo, the company that I work for, is not very strong on the swan side. We have a very strong presence in poultry, very strong presence in dairy. We're a global company. We have operations on every continent that has livestock. So we're very well known, but not here in the U.S., not on the swine side. And so what we're trying to do is build our presence up. And a lot of the coursework around marketing and then that return on your investment, right? So that budgeting aspect, where are you going to spend your dollars to get that return? And so that has been very valuable. Now, the other side of it is the human capital. So I personally have a team of six that I manage. They all have different personalities. They live in different parts of the U.S., which in some cases are different parts of the world. it's very, very funny how, you know, just in the U.S., you know, somebody from the Southeast like I am, how different that can be from somebody in the Midwest or Texas or, you know, Wisconsin. It's real unique, but at the same time, it brings a part of my coursework, which is handling people and teaming. One of the unique things about our course is we're paired up with a team of people. So there's six other team members, seven total, that I've worked with from day one. And we do projects together, big, small. We have to assign project leaders. We have to assign, you know, who's going to do the presentation, who's going to do the deliverables, map it out, create project plans, and then hold each other accountable. And it's very similar to what I do for work. And I've actually been able to gain a lot of, call it best practices, from the coursework just around human capital and teaming from my program.
I think soft skill management is something that we all have to continue to do throughout our careers.
Absolutely.
You know, and you mentioned personality styles and where I was in Carthage, we did that a lot. We did this training. And so we focused a lot on identifying how it was best to communicate with this team player might be different than this team member.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and the cultural differences aside, just the communication strategies were different. So I think those soft skills, that's a wonderful thing that they're adding to your program. That's great.
Self-assessments are one of the key parts of our program. So we did do DISC. We also did a assessment called Team Booster, which analyzes how we work as a team. We did SBI feedback, and that is literally teaches you how to, as a leader and as a person, how to give feedback in a work environment, which is very critical, right? Because depending on the person's personality, you want to give good, valuable feedback. Sometimes it's, hey, you offended me, but I want to let you know you offended me, because if I don't, you're going to keep doing it. Right. But I want to give it in a way that doesn't make you defensive. Right. I got to let you know that I was offended and please don't do that again. But in a way that allows you to know I'm not upset with you. Just let's work on this. Or what's your conflict style? Right. Are you a confrontational? Are you avoiding? There's so many different dynamics, not just personality types, right? DISC is the big one. And we can all sit around and talk about our DISC personalities and how well they peg us, which is always fun. And there's others. Insights is another good one that really looks at your personalities. So those self-assessments are absolutely very valuable and something that I would highly recommend anybody do that's in a leadership position or looking to grow their career.
Do you ever do those with your team members now in your current job?
We do. We actually, Insights is something that our company promotes. And so we just went through Insights training, which is very similar to DISC, but I would say a little bit more in depth. And it pegs you. I mean, you only answer, I think it's less than 50 questions, but the way they peg you and your personality is very insightful.
Yes. Yes. I can remember sitting with my team and reading my traits and they were all laughing and pointing at me. They're like, oh my gosh, that's exactly you. And there were things that I didn't realize I was doing that was upsetting my teammates. And so once you're aware of it too, it's being aware that you're doing it and, you know, finding new ways to manage a team or to work with teammates and in group settings.
Yeah, actually, one of the cool things that we studied in class that I'd never really thought about, and it's now that I've studied it, I hear it all the time, but that's your emotional intelligence, your EQ. Everybody's born with a certain level of IQ that you can hit, but your EQ, you can actually invest into it and you can grow your EQ, your emotional intelligence. And that's really all about being self-aware. How you're perceived by those around you. And the better you are at your self-awareness, then the better you can lead and motivate a team.
I think that's great. That's a very, very good comment and one that I think our readers should really think about if they're looking at self-improvement and, you know, how to grow their business or if they're having challenges within their team to think about those processes.
Absolutely.
So one of the other things, as you said, as your current role is of course, business, is thinking about financial documents and the information that we get. So obviously, being involved in the swine industry, we're not just raising pigs, but we're trying to have a business to support our families and our farms. So, you know, how do we start to take all of that financial information that we get and really apply it into our everyday activities?
That's a very good question. Growing up, I grew up on a broiler farm. So my dad had four chicken houses and we worked on them every weekend, every time we had a school break. And I had no idea the financial hardship he was under just to have those chicken houses. And one of the reasons I would say I personally never understood what he went through just to keep the farm afloat and make money and put food on the table is because he didn't invest, and I mean invest, into a good accountant, right? So when we're running a small business, your best friend should be your accountant. a person that you can trust with all your financial information so that then they can put it into those financial documents and help you understand what type of business you're actually running. So when we talk about financial statements, we're talking about a balance statement, an income statement, and a cash flow. So growing up, all I ever heard about was cash is king. If you're turning money, you're making money. It was a very popular term that my dad used and a lot of other local farmers used. It has a lot to do with also the way the contract poultry industry is formed. But if you're turning money, you're making money. But that's not necessarily the truth, right? On your balance sheet, you see all your assets. You see your liabilities. You see your equities. You see what your money, your time, your effort is put into and what kind of value you have out of it. Your income statement is basically your profit and loss statement. What you got coming in, are you spending more? Or are you actually making money? What is critical, especially for small businesses, is your cash flow. You can outgrow your cash flow. There is no doubt about it. Anybody that's looking to get into farming, I would absolutely tell them to make sure they have a side hustle that's bringing in cash, right? I don't care if it's pigs, dairy, swine. You want to make sure you have a steady cash flow when you're starting up. Otherwise, you're going to get in a cash flow problem. Yeah, at the end of the year, you might have had a net positive income, but you had a negative cash flow. And so when I had no concept of those terminologies in that idea before I got into this program, and learning that, one of the first conversations I have with my own dad, who still has his farm, is what kind of conversations are you having with your accountant? Are you making sure that your farm is being managed financially the way that it should, so that when he's ready to retire, he can either hire somebody to manage his farm, or he knows what kind of assets he's sitting on to sell it, and not just waiting for a real estate agent or somebody to come in and try to buy it out from under him.
Yeah, I think certainly having those exit strategies, or as you're rolling over a family farm to maybe a younger generation, having those conversations are critical, and not at the end, right? We should be doing it years ahead for tax purposes. And
absolutely. And then you can start getting into, you know, your capital gains taxes and what's better, a will or living trust. A good accountant can give you that guidance. Any person that is running a production operation should not be trying to do their own finances. You're too focused on taking care of the animals, taking care of the land, taking care of your facilities. The last thing that you have time to do is manage your own finances.
That's a very good point. How often do you think you should meet with your accountant?
Ooh, that's a very good question. No less than quarterly, but I would say monthly. You should have at least a call with them to see what your monthly profit and loss is and see where you stand on a cash flow basis, right? What bills do you have coming up? No different than you and I, who sit down at the beginning of the month and say, these are my bills and this is the cash I've got coming in. Every business should be ran that same way. You're going to have certain bills, whether it's a mortgage or a loan payment, that's going to be the same every month regardless. And then you're going to have your variable bills. Think of when we had the storm that came through a couple weeks ago and everybody's running their heaters 24/7. Were you prepared for that, right? Or did you have to go get a loan from the bank to cover those extra expenses? And so if you have a good accountant and you're meeting with them regularly and you're looking at your cash flow and your income and your expenses, then you should be able to plan ahead accordingly to help cover some of those risks. And it's all about risk management.
Yeah, that's very, very good. So when we think about risk management, what would be some key criteria that you should be looking at? So you talked about cash flow, but when you really get down to risk management, what should be some key things to be thinking about?
If we're talking about a production facility, when we talk about risk management, if you don't have your own feed mill, have a great relationship with a feed mill and with a feed mill that has quality ingredients, right? So if you have quality ingredients, then you're less likely to have disease because of them. And if they carry quality ingredients and they have steady supply, right? You're less likely to run out. So that's risk management number one. Risk management number two, not only should you have a good relationship with your county, you should have a good relationship with your banker, right? So if you do get in a pinch, you can get access to liquidity, to cash fast. And so you want to make sure, just like I told you at the beginning, one of the great things about my program is the networking. You should be doing that within your community as well. You should have your banker, your accountant, you should have your feed mill, your nutritionist. I'm in, on the nutrition side. So the relationship a producer has with a nutritionist is very essential. The relationship you have with your veterinary is essential. And taking all of their opinions into account before you make a decision is a way to mitigate a lot of your risk, right? Don't just go with one person's opinion all the time, whether it's your nutritionist or your veterinary or the feed mill or the bank, because the bank may not lead you down the right direction either. Or your accountant, you know, your accountant doesn't know anything about raising pigs. They only know about numbers. So you have to take all the information you gather and use it and make a wise decision. You don't always have a black and white decision, but at least you mitigate as much of the risk as possible when making that decision.
Yeah, I think the other thing I think about too is I always think about your historical information. So what's the market trends and how do we offset from highs and lows and some of the risks that we see? And some of it's predictable and obviously some of it's not, but you know, how do you manage through some of those financial risks just of the ebbs and flows of market? I think those are, you know, that's a very interesting question to pose. Do you have any ideas or suggestions to our viewers for that?
Historical data is historical data for a reason. It shows you a past that is oftentimes comes back around, right? We have cycles in our economy. We have cycles in our crop production. We have cycles in our weather patterns. And if you can take all that information and use it to make a solid decision, once again, you've mitigated so much risk. Oftentimes, and I find this in myself and with my dad, when I sit down and talk actual business with him, if you don't take that data and actually analyze it, some of the decisions you feel like you're making off of past experience doesn't line up with the data. And the data is king, right? I've taken feed sample after feed sample after feed sample, and you feel like you've got a good feel of what may be in that until you actually analyze it. And then you analyze it, and then you analyze it, and then you analyze it, and then you realize over a stretch, you know, this female that I've been working with that looks beautiful on the outside, their mixer CVs are terrible.
Sure.
You know? And so it's all about taking that data and using that data wisely and making sure that you're taking advantage of the information that you have.
I think that's extremely fair. And we talk about that a lot in the swine industry, not just financial data, but production data and how we may not be using it to help guide us in the direction that our business should go. But I think at times people almost feel overwhelmed by the amount of data that could be coming at them, right? So sure. We do have the money coming in, but we also have all this information from our sow herds or our grow finish barns. And so how do you start to manage all of that data where, I mean, it's important, but you know, how do you start to separate it out and focus in on the key pieces?
You know, growing up in the poultry industry, we always talked about feed, water, air. You get those three right, then you've done basically all you can to make sure the animal's taken care of. And ultimately, it doesn't matter which industry we're looking at, it's all about the animal. And we want to give them the optimal opportunity to grow the best they can to their genetic potential, right? And so you have all this history, all this data coming at you. Well, rely on the people who know how to read it. So rely on your nutritionist, rely on your vet. For yourself, when you're talking about taking care of that animal, whether it's for your sow herd or your grow finish, then manage the stuff that you know, right? Coming from a production background myself, I know feed, I know water, I know air. I know how to manage an environment where an animal can thrive. I know how to make sure to have clean water, right? I know how to make sure to have my CO2 going out and oxygen coming in, right? Handling that negative pressure atmosphere. So do what you know and do it well, and then rely on the people that you have around you based off the network that you built to make solid decisions.
Very good. I'm going to change gears just a little bit here. I think that's all great and wonderful. So financial records and how we use them is awesome. One of the things that you're also doing in your role is marketing and sales.
Yes.
Right? So when we start talking about, you know, some of the information that you've learned through your program in terms of marketing and sales, how do we start to do just move from the basics and grow outside of just general, well, I'm going to announce that I have a product type of situation to really getting your information out there. So could you maybe help us understand a good way to promote our product? Because it's not, right, it's not just a feed company selling food. It's our hog company selling product to the consumers. And so
absolutely,
you know, we need to be aware of how to do a better job with our marketing and sales.
You're exactly right. So one of the things you got to keep in mind is if you don't tell your story, somebody else will. And so from a marketing standpoint, you have to find your story. Are you a family farm? Are you taking care of animals and you're producing and feeding the world? Right? That's a story. And you got to get that story out there, whether it's, and there's so many avenues right now. You have your Twitters, your Instagrams, your LinkedIns. There are multiple avenues to get your story out that don't cost you a lot of money, right? It may, a FTE, a full-time employee that's handling your marketing, but it doesn't have to take a PhD to do that. You can hire somebody that is reliable to tell your story. You just have to make sure your story is consistent and it gets it out there to the public, to the people that you want it to get out there. If you're a feed mill in Iowa, your consumer are the producers around you, right? So what is the avenue to get in front of them? Now, a lot of that is face-to-face sales. That is going out there to the producers, being involved in their local communities, their local FFAs, their FHA or 4-Hs, being in front of those people and showing that you care is the branding that you need. It's not about taking people to dinners. It's not about putting signage everywhere, which is great. There's opportunities for that. But it's really showing people you care and that then you start to differentiate yourselves, right? What makes you better than the feed mill down the road? What makes you better as a producer than the producer down the road? And so you really have to identify, once again, self-awareness. You have to identify what you're good at. You have to find what you can benefit on by promoting. When I look at on the poultry side, a couple of companies here in North Georgia that really hit it big before ABF movement, they went ahead and made that decision, right? They made that decision to go ABF right away before anybody else did, and they promoted a healthier animal. And not just a healthier animal, but an animal that's healthier for you. Now, that's marketing. That's a story that they told, and it has paid off very well for them. So I would tell the listeners to this podcast, find your story. That was one of the key things about any of the marketing classes I took. Yeah, you can talk about the sales funnel, the marketing funnel. You want to build up your brand, and you bring all these people into your funnel, and you work it down to the final sale. It's changed, right? The traditional sales funnel has changed and it's more of a cycle, right? So just as soon as you build that relationship, well, now you're building on it, and retaining your customers is key to any successful business. How do you retain those customers? By letting them know you care, by promoting what they promote. If the packers are looking to promote a certain lifestyle or a certain type of product, then your promotion on your farm should line up with theirs. Then you have a consistent story top to bottom.
That's very interesting. And And when I think about marketing, you know, we sit around and we have these conversations about what story we want to tell, what group do we want to be involved with. And sometimes when you're in those meetings, there's so many ideas, and yet we struggle to make a decision. Which avenue, right? Which avenue are we going to pick to go down? And so we almost become paralyzed, right? Because we can't make the decision because we're worried about making the wrong decision. And as our industry almost gets a little bit smaller, right? We get more and more competitive as the margins are what they are. How do we help groups, and whether that's the producer or, you know, the student or, you know, a company, what advice can you give them for figuring out how to make the right decision?
Ooh, that's a very tough question, right? What is the right decision? You got to figure out what your business model is, right? What is, what's your ultimate goal? If you can identify what your ultimate goal is, are you the low cost, high volume producer? Then your decision's easy, right? You're turning and you're burning. If you are the high value, high quality product producer, you are then going to focus your attention on high quality feeds, high quality employees. Your margin on your product is going to be bigger, but your volume is going to be much smaller. And so then it's all about analyzing your return on your investment, your what it costs for input versus what you're going to get on your output. Once you identify what you want, then the decisions become much smaller and easier to focus on. You can't be good at everything. You can't. So you got to find that one thing you can hang your hat on to focus on so that you can live and die on that. But you also have to be flexible with the markets. And COVID has taught us all to be flexible, right? It has taught producers to lock in shackle space, right? Don't live and die by the cash basis. I'm all for going to the casino and putting $100 down on black and on red, right? Because either way I win. So you got to figure out what your business model is. But once again, it's all about your network. It really is. Expand your network, expand your relationships, and then you can really find your niche and then be good at it.
Very good. I think that's great advice to our audience. Blake, as we're wrapping up our time together, are there any final points that you'd like to share with the group?
Thank you for this opportunity. It's a great time to sit down and talk about something I've been doing for the last couple of years. It's an opportunity to introduce myself to a lot of your listeners that I've never met. So I'm looking forward to meeting everybody in person. I would say probably the first opportunity would be World Pork, which fingers crossed, it does go on this year, where we're looking very much so to getting out there in June. And then I do have to do a little plug for Adesayo. So if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me or to any of my team members at Adesayo. We're here to help.
Great, great. Well, thank you.
It is time to our famous three.
Used in more than 1 billion pigs worldwide, Circumvent G2 vaccines from Merck Animal Health provide the monumental protection swine herds need in the ever-evolving fight against circovirus. Circumvent PCV-G2 and Circumvent PCV-MG2 are evolutions of the original vaccine, modified to deliver the same efficacy in a convenient one- or two-dose option for increased flexibility. That's protection you can trust. Learn more at circumvent-g2.com. For knowledge and news from the global swine industry, access our partner, thepigsite.com.
So as we kind of wrap up, Marcio likes to have a few questions that we ask all of our participants, as you know. So the first question I ask is, what swine book do you use for your resources?
Right now, being in school and then having two young ones, the Three Little Pigs. Once I wrap up my MBA, I'll be looking for good swine books that I would love for recommendations. But right now, my plate's full when it comes to reading material.
There's some good lessons learned from the Three Little Pigs. So
that there is.
It's very fair. Well, how about a non-swine book? Are there any that you would recommend to the audience?
Oh, there's several. One that I just wrapped up reading, and I know I've talked about networking quite a bit today, and that's Never Eat Alone. So that is a great one to read. And it's all about, you know, managing your network. And it's not about having a lot of people. It's having quality relationships, relationships that give and you receive and you give back and they receive and you build upon that. Relationships aren't one way.
Great. I'll have to look into that one. And then lastly, when you think about being successful, whether it's being successful in the swine industry or being successful in business, what do you think are some qualities that a person should be working on to be professional and be successful?
You know, successful is a term that means different things to different people, right? For me, one of the assignments that I had in school was very similar to this, and it took a lot of self-evaluation and internal thoughts to really define success. And for me, success is my family taken care of? Are they financially and are they healthy? If so, then am I happy doing what I'm doing? And if those line up, then I think I've been successful in what I'm doing.
Very insightful. That's a great answer, Blake. I like that one. So again, we have Blake Wilson with us today for our SwineIt podcast. And when we think about what Blake and I have talked about for the last few minutes is really that we want to focus on networking. We want to make sure that we have people from a variety of areas to help us be successful in our businesses, as well as our personal career paths and personal lives. And we want to be thinking about how we share that story, how we're telling our business to the world, and keeping it so that our business, keeping it so that our business focuses in on making the right decision. And the right decision for your business might be different than your neighbors down the road or Absolutely. Your competitor. So from that, Blake, we thank you for your words of wisdom today and your conversation. And I wish you all the best.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Imagine if with a few key concepts, you could have the potential to create a massive positive impact by bringing from hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars for swine producers. Join this small group and go to the next level of swine nutrition on the 7-week long elite online training in applied swine nutrition and feeding. It's conducted by myself, Dr. Marcio Gonçalves, and my world-class invited speakers. Additionally, you enjoy an exclusive community to exchange ideas. Go now to www.eliteswinenutritionist.com.